From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Welcome to the Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome to the Dirk Pohlman Show from Berlin, Germany. And my guest today is Thomas Röper, a German journalist with a story that is not really originating in Germany, in journalism, but one of the most important correspondents we have right now in Russia. So, Thomas, everything okay? Because you were on an assignment, do you hear me? Are you online?
Yes, everything worked out as usual.
Okay, the sound is could be twisted up a little bit.
On and now you like it more. Side.
Okay, that's better, much better. Okay, I think in Germany you are well known. In Russia you are even better known. I think we have to introduce you a little bit to the audience here. Because in the Anglo-Saxon world, you haven't really shown up until now. And it's really it's a pity, because what you do is extraordinary, and the listeners will notice that during the show. So let's start. What do you do regularly now in Russia towards sending information towards Germany? Please describe in a few short sentences what you're doing.
Yeah, well, on my side, I'm... writing about Russia, because there are many, many rumors in the West how life in Russia is, and I'm just telling how it is somehow and in reality. The other thing is that I'm explaining the Russian policy, which makes me a Russian propagandist, but somehow I think it's something else, because in the West you don't hear the Russian arguments. They always say what Russia might maybe mean. And I'm just translating, for example, a speech of Putin or whatever, so that the people can see one-on-one in the original what the Russians are saying. And then people can make their own mind and say, okay, this is might be reasonable, or this not. And I'm having a look on Western media with the sources and saying, hey, they read this, and this might be right or wrong, because. So I'm a little bit the one who's criticizing Western media and giving the Russian view. This maybe is the short version of what I'm doing on my side.
Yes, very well. You are doing exactly what a foreign correspondent should be doing, and what our foreign correspondents in the, I don't know what to call them anymore, mainstream media are not doing. They don't tell what the situation in Russia is, what the reporting there is, what the opinions there in the general population are. And you've made yourself something like a very special kind of reporter from Russia, because I read your blog regularly. It's called antispiegel.ru, which is in German, but nowadays you can translate it easily via Google Translate to English also. But it's really, really interesting, because what we get is firsthand, as you described, firsthand translated, sometimes translated articles, sometimes translated speeches, which are important, and you can get an own judgment. And I noticed that, because what I did, for example, I sent it to my father, who was not very favorable of Russia, and I sent him some of the Putin speeches that you had translated. And then I asked him very reluctantly and careful what he thought about it. And he said, the man is reasonable, completely reasonable. And that is really what happens sometimes. That was one of the things I always wondered, does Putin write these intellectually very interesting speeches himself, or does he have speech writers like it's usual in the West?
Well, I don't know this. I'm not working in the Kremlin. But what I see is I'm translating this also partly. Putin several times a year is going on public discussions on events. Yes. And there he is for 3-4 hours live. And sometimes even with Western journalists who try to grill him, as we call it in Germany. It's very, very fascinating that he has a very wide knowledge. So I don't think he's writing his speeches really well, but really himself. But maybe he's taking part in it, because When you see what he is saying, when he is talking free on a podium, being with a journalist or with several journalists for 4 hours without any papers or whatever, you see that the speeches he is reading and the things he's saying in discussions is, well, it's quite the same. So either he has good speechwriters who know him, or he is doing it himself with them. I don't know. But the more interesting thing is even to see him on discussions, when you see when he's asked and answers freely.
Yes, I agree completely with that. For example, the Valdai conference, which I try to follow when they're on, and then you see that he's not like Annalena Baerbock, who breaks down when there is a microphone in front of her and there's no teleprompter, or Joe Biden. He can do it without. He can speak just from the hip. He will deliver something that is intellectually interesting always. Yeah. So
I started writing in 2018, so I'm a journalist. I'm a journalist since 18, and the first book I wrote was about Putin, and it was different from other books we have in the West, because other writers say, well, I like Putin because, and then they write a book how good Putin is, or they say he is bad, and they write a book because why he is bad. And I made a book which is more than 50% quote. So I just took the international topics and said, this is happening, and this is what Putin said. And then we have 50% of the book is just quotes. And this was a very big surprise, because this book became a bestseller from zero with an unknown author. And this showed me that there is a really need, at least in Germany it was like that, to find out what is Putin really saying. And this is what I'm doing on my side also, that I just show what he's saying. And then you can say, hey, well, this is arguments. I like them or I don't like them. But he's always telling his arguments. So there is something to discuss after that. And this is the difference to Western leaders who just have their, let's say, slogans, which they repeat always. And Putin has arguments, and you can say, okay, this I like, this I don't like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a big, I want to cut that short now, because there's so much interesting what we have to talk about that you do, that I want to leave it there just for one short point. What do you think is very important in terms of the difference between reality and the perception media-wise? What is an interesting or an important topic that we are misinformed, disinformed in the West right now? Just one example.
Well, there's this is hard to say, because yes, we are talking about Russia. There's nearly everything. In Russia, we have the thing is, well, I give an example from the past, even not touching today. This is again an example from Germany, when we had the Georgian War, the Caucasus War, in 2008. The German television came to Russia and interviewed Putin, and they announced on TV that they will show the whole interview with Putin about the war. And the interview was 9 minutes, and Putin looked like an idiot. And the Russians also saw it, and they published the interview also, and turned out that the interview was 30 minutes. So the Western media cut out 21 minutes of the interview with all the arguments Putin had. And this is what's happening in the Western media. So, and this concerns all topics regarding Russia. So, we can choose any topic, and we will do this today, to see where the arguments of Russia, why Russia is doing what it's doing, are hidden in the West. And that's maybe the interesting point in that. So, we can take really any topic, whether it's Ukraine, which is actual, whether it's Syria, whatever. The Russian arguments are not mentioned in the West. That's the problem.
Yeah. This is also why your blog is so important. And you have been discredited really in the last, let's say, 1.5 years. It was really became bad with the war, where because what you do is really, you can get the original Russian magazine articles or web articles or speeches and get them in translation. And as you said, make up your own mind. And this is called then disinformation. That is very strange. It's as much to the source as possible. But we noticed that within a case with another journalist who I hope to get sometime here on the show, Patrick Barb, who was a professor for journalism, and they called him because he went to Russia, to Donetsk, to watch the vote there. They called that fake objectivity, to go there yourself and look at it. It would be much better if you would sit at home and get from the Western sources how he should report about it. That would be more objective in their views. And then they fired him from being a journalist. So this is the stage of journalism that we are in right now. But I want to get to a second point. You have written a book, which I read completely, and it's mind-blowing. It's called Inside Corona, and you collaborated there with an IT specialist who, to cut that short, we want to keep him anonymous. What he did is he's using network tools. So he finds out the network of the COVID-19 network and policy and pharmaceutical industry and WHO in the American government, in the European institutions. And this is, you went deep down into it, and then it became quite astonishing to see. Maybe you can give a short overview. The book, unfortunately, does not exist in English. I don't know of anything of that quality and scope on the English-speaking world. That might be a hint to somebody who's interested in that. But it's really, it was a big hit, of course, only on the alternative media in Germany. But maybe you can give us a short idea. For example, favorite case is Margaret Hamburger from me. But that's just a hint if you don't know where to start and where to end, because it's so much.
Yeah, Margaret Hamburger is too big. We can take Peter Pyatt. So first of all, a few words about the book. I mentioned in another show an NGO which is called Open Philanthropy. And after that, I got an email from a viewer and saying, well, you mentioned Open Philanthropy. I have information. Are you interested? And I said, yes, what do you have? And then he wrote, yeah, well, I'm IT specialist. I have my own company. When Corona started, I was interested who is making decisions and who is making money. And he said, I took a sheet of paper, and then I very quickly saw that it doesn't fit on a sheet of paper. And he bought IT programs which are used by secret services, police, and other authorities. You can buy them. They're just, each of them is several thousand euros, and they force, they go into the net and take all the data themselves. So, and you see very quickly big the networks, who is together with whom. You see who is working where, who was together on conferences, who is getting grants. There are programs, even if you block on Facebook that other can see your friends, the programs can see it. So with the programs, we can see who are your friends, and the programs even see who are friends on Facebook, not only friends, but giving likes, being together on conferences and whatever. So you get a very big picture of things. And then he said, yeah, well, the pandemic was planned since 2016. I said, you are crazy. And then we made a Zoom call. And I said, well, I was just working another project on NGOs. I said, well, I tell you my NGOs and you show me what your program is doing. So he showed me his screen. I gave him the NGO, and in 10 seconds, this program gave the whole network. I was searching for half a year. So, and this was really, really impressive. And then we started talking, and at the end of the day, we wrote this book. And one just example is Peter Pyatt. Peter Pyatt is a Belgian.
Let's have a cliffhanger here, Robert, Thomas. Thomas. Let's have a cliffhanger, because I need to get some advertisement in there. And that's a good point. You will hear about Peter Pyatt after the advertisement. Stay tuned.
You should hear what David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan are talking about.
Often, It is the organization. It is the rotten organization that are the bad guys. I never signed up to go to any war the government sent me to, no matter how ridiculous. We sign up to protect the nation, as you said, and that sometimes means saying no if what is being done to the military forces is some sort of sham, which is only for some sort of ulterior motive, and that could be to enrich various arms companies and or to get people elected. They do focus groups and they do opinion polling. And so a lot of very big decisions, sending good soldiers to their deaths and whatever, it was based on some sort of opinion poll and the idea that you might sacrifice those lives to win, or to think, not even to win the election, but just a bit more of an approval rating, a bump in the polls. Who knows? We'll send these guys over the top. Maybe we'll get a bump in the polls. Maybe we'll get a bigger donation from one of these big arms companies. I mean, that just makes my blood boil. It's an absolute abomination.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on TNT Radio.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really?
Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is the Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And my guest today is Thomas Röper, a German journalist living in St. Petersburg and doing incredible work in transporting really what is on in Russia to Germany. And of course, that is not wanted nowadays. He's doing a very interesting job as a foreign correspondent. And he wrote an extremely important book, Inside Corona in German, that we are just discussing. And we had an example to show you what the book is about. He was working with an IT specialist who uses program software that intelligence service and police investigators use during their investigations, and they used it to find out the network of the COVID-19 pandemic scheme. So you were talking about Peter Pyatt. Please continue, Thomas.
Yeah, so Peter Pyatt is a virologist from Belgium, and he was working at the UNAIDS program till 2009. And then he became a senior fellow at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And in 2010, he became the director of a London institute, the London School of Hygienics and Tropical Medicine, I think it's called, which is funded by Bill Gates with, well, I think altogether 180, even more million dollars. And by the way, by Rockefeller also. So Peter Pyatt and his wife, by the way, who's also working there, they're absolutely financed by Bill Gates. And then when the pandemic started, Peter Pyatt became the advisor of the EU Commission and of the personal advisor of Corona for COVID-19, of the chief of the EU Commission, of Ursula von der Leyen, on Corona, on COVID-19. So he also is an advisor of the German government, of several other organizations. And this is just an example. They put the advisors, Bill Gates put his advisors, there are about 15, 20 people we mentioned in the book, and they are in the key positions in the Western countries, whether it's America, US, whether it's Germany, EU, European Union. And they, and we remember the pandemic, the politicians always said, we are doing what our advisors are telling us. And these advisors were completely paid by Bill Gates and several, we have six other NGOs. They were paid by them and told the governments what to do. And now we have to think, if Peter Pyatt is paid by Bill Gates, becomes the advisor of Ursula von der Leyen, the let's say prime minister of the European Union, and then we have to think why in May 2021 she announced that she will buy only the Pfizer stuff. And she bought a Pfizer vaccination for 70 billion euro. This is 4.5 billion doses of a vaccination for 450 people in the EU. So this was a big deal for Pfizer. And well, maybe people know this, but the negotiations to buy this stuff was done by WhatsApp, via WhatsApp. And when in the EU they started asking, hey, can we look at this, it was deleted. So nobody knows what they discussed, but we just know that she bought 4.5 billion doses for 450 million people of a vaccine, which is produced by Bill Gates, who's by Pfizer, but Bill Gates is a strategic investor. And she got the advice from a guy who is since 2009 on the pay list of Bill Gates. This is just one example, and we have 15 of those in the book. And this explained how the pandemic was organized.
Yes, exactly. That is the point in the book is you turn a page and you get stories like this all the time, and they're very well researched and they're factual. So it's like a
investigator. Everybody can cross-check. We have 500 sources yes. on 350 pages. So good luck. I would be happy if somebody proves me that I'm wrong.
Yeah. No, it's a treasure trove. This is why I said it should exist all in English, because it's a seminal work. If you go into this book, then what you see is the revolving door tactic and putting on different hats. They go outside and then they are specialists and experts. They go inside. They are part of the board of directors of pharmaceutical companies. Then they are advisors for the government. And they have on different hats, but it's a small group of people. People who really ran the show.
15 to 20 people.
I want to get to the book. Pardon? Again?
15 to 20 people. So it's quite interesting, yeah.
It's you see that the structure that looks like follow the science is really the business of a few people. But I want to get into it's a similar scheme. You're finishing your book on the Biden family, and the Biden family in Ukraine. And I will sometimes interfere, but I'd like you to talk about it. We have talked about this a little bit before, and give us an outline on what your take is there. And please remember for the listeners that Biden is not involved in Ukraine since he became president. It's much earlier. It's in his. It's yours, the scheme. You tell us.
Yeah. This is a very long story. It's also very complex. Biden is involved in Ukraine at least since 2014. The Maidan. I have this already in another book I wrote. Was orchestrated by the West. You can see, and the organizations who were leading the Maidan, they had to open the NGOs, open their annual reports, and you can see that they were all paid by the West. It's like Soros, it's Embassy of US, Netherlands. So again, a very small number of organizations who orchestrated the Maidan. And as soon as the Maidan coup was done, this is maybe some people might know that the son of Hunter Biden, of Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, became member of the board of directors of a Ukrainian gas company, which is called Burisma. This was already in May, I think, 2014. And from then on, you can just choose the details you want. I just make a short overview. And from then on, Biden is very close related to Ukraine. He chose the prosecutors in Ukraine. There were financial schemes on gas reverse where Biden earns money.
Gas reverse is. What gas reverse is.
Yeah, we can make a 3-hour show of the at least. So okay, gas reverse. Ukraine after the Maidan said, well, we don't like Russia and we will not buy Russian gas. Good. And then they announced we are buying European gas. Well, everybody knows Europe has no gas. So what happened? They took the gas which is coming to Europe through the Ukrainian pipeline, put some companies in Slovakia or Hungary, and they bought gas, which was coming, well, came from Russia, and when it crossed Ukraine, it was already put out of the pipeline into the Ukrainian system, but was bought from Europe. And the companies took up to $100 for 1,000 cubic meters, extra money, and bought the gas by fact for Ukraine. So somebody just earned for the, making a paper that the gas is from Europe, made like $100 extra money on each 1,000 cubic meters. And this was dealed by Amos Hochstein. Amos Hochstein was the energy advisor of Vice President Biden, and he was sitting on this business. When you see the whole story of Russia mixing in the elections in 2016, Clinton versus Trump, this is also interesting. 50 million, for example, for the election company of Clinton came from Ukraine. Nobody knows that. This was a quite black scheme coming from the Burisma company, who is where Hunter Biden, the son of Joe Biden, was sitting. And the whole story of Russia was interfering in the U.S. elections was an Ukrainian story, by the way, by the Democrats. It's very, very complex topic. All the Trump scandals, like Ukraine scandal, impeachment, they were also, as we remember, connected to Ukraine. And this story is, by the way, also interesting. So until today, Biden has a very close link to Ukraine, and we can choose any topic. I think we will not have the time to go through all this in detail today because we have just 1 hour. But this is what I'm writing about. What we think, or what people think, are different topics, like Russian mixing in elections 2016, Trump impeachment, the whole Mueller report, corruption in Ukraine, and so on. This is one big story. And when you look at it, you see again always the same very few number of people. I will just give a funny example. Maybe the listeners have heard about the laptop from hell, which Hunter Biden, when he was stoned on crack, left somewhere for repairing and forget about it. When this story popped up, this was in October, right before the elections, Trump versus Biden. When this story popped up, the media just blocked it as if it didn't happen. And for example, in Facebook, there was a special person. The title was, I think, the integrity of the U.S. elections. So they had this person was working on blocking everything which could affect the integrity of the U.S. elections. Her name what was her name? Anna. Give me a minute. But anyway, the interesting thing is that she was a member of the team of Vice President Biden and was also involved in the Ukraine story, which she herself later told the public in interviews. When the election came, she was the one at Facebook telling us what is true on the elections, which we can publish, which not. And of course, the Hunter Biden laptop story was blocked by Facebook. Let's ask ourselves why.
Yeah, and there was also, it was not only blocked, you had this letter
Anna McKenyu. Anna McKenyu. I got the name. Anna McKenyu.
Okay. Anna McKenyu. Okay. There was the letter from the intelligence people, the intelligence community, so to speak, big names, who said the Hunter Biden laptop story is Russian disinformation. Don't look at it. Go the other way. There's nothing to see. This is what we all heard internationally, also in Germany. And then
this is very interesting.
Slowly
this is
it
very
came
interesting.
Out.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. This is interesting if you look at the Twitter files. Because in the Twitter files, we see that the idea that this was Russian disinformation came from the FBI. And the FBI told Twitter, this is disinformation, be so kind to block it. And even Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook already in an interview said, well, if FBI came to us and said this is Russian disinformation and they asked us to block it. The problem is that the FBI had the notebook, the laptop of Hunter Biden for months already, and they knew that it was real. So the FBI knew that this is real information. The laptop does exist. The information is real. And they told the social networks to block it because it's Russian disinformation. This is a very interesting detail on this story.
Might already read about. Let's get into the part with the corruption in Ukraine. I mean, this has to be, Ukraine is depicted as a model country of democracy. It's not. You have only all the TV stations who are not according to the Zelensky government are forbidden now. It's a totalitarian media system, and it's one of the most desperate, corrupt countries, I think, worldwide. It is in Europe, definitely. It's in the top two or three of. But maybe you can tell us how Biden is involved in that.
For example, let's take the Hunter Biden story on Burisma. So Hunter Biden became member of the board of directors of Burisma. By the way, not only him, the former president of Poland, another guy. A friend of Hunter and Joe, the stepson of the foreign minister, who was it then, John Kerry. They all became members of the board of directors of Burisma. Burisma is a fracking gas company in Ukraine, and they had problems in 2014 because the owner of the company, Mr. Slochevsky, was on the government before Maidan. He was one of the ministers. He was for ecology. So being the minister of ecology, he gave his own company, Burisma, license for fracking gas. And of course, this is already corruption if a minister gives his own company all the licenses. So after the Maidan, he got problems. And then there was money laundering, corruption, and whatever. And so he took all these guys like Hunter Biden, the stepson of John Kerry, Polish president, and so on. They all got an official salary of $50,000 a month, even if people like Hunter Biden didn't have a clue on gas, but they got these jobs. And then Joe Biden, what happened? There was the general prosecutor in Ukraine, Mr. Shokin. And he was working on the Burisma topic. And Biden and Kerry didn't want that. In Ukraine, this is not published in the West. Very interesting. In Ukraine in 1920, telephone calls were published. They were on YouTube. Of course, it's deleted now. Where Ukrainian President Poroshenko and U.S. Vice President Biden were discussing the corruption schemes. So they were discussing, for example, that Biden said, we have to get rid of this shocking, of this general prosecutor. And Poroshenko said, yes, okay. They said, officially, when you look in the news, it was told that Shokin was corrupt. He was not. Poroshenko and Biden said, well, there is no corruption, but anyway, we say this and we get rid of him. And this is what happened. So they fired Shokin. Biden, by the way, chose the new general prosecutor. It was Mr. Lutsenko. And this Mr. Lutsenko, of course, closed all the files against Burisma, where Hunter Biden was a director. And by the way, in earlier times, this was all conspiracy theory, but our friend Hunter Biden published his own book, and he wrote that he was on crack, alcohol, and whatever at that time. He was not able to work. He was even for weeks not reachable by phone because he was having a prostitute striptease parties in some motels in the U.S. But he got money, $50,000 a month, for being a member of the board of directors. What for? Because Shokin was fired and the company wasn't touched. And this was also the reason for $50 million coming from Burisma to the Clinton campaign in 2016. I have the information again on real because I had interviews with Mr. Onyshenko, who was an advisor of President Poroshenko after the Maidan, and I have hours of interviews where he told me all this stuff. Now many things of what he told me that time are already confirmed. So he told me the truth. And well, this is just one of these stories. And Biden himself, there's a quite famous video, who is working on this topic, knows it, where President Biden later on said in a discussion on the Council on Foreign Relations in the U.S., and he proudly said, yeah, I fired Poroshenko. I fired this prosecutor Shokin, and I told the Ukrainian government, fire him, otherwise you don't get the billion from the U.S. And then he said, yeah, and they said, well, you are not the president. The President Obama promised us. And he said, call the president. You will not get the money until you fire this guy. He was proud of that. So it's all open, but nobody puts all this story together. And right now, this is the book I'm working on.
Yeah. This is just one story. I noticed at that time in 2014, I got photos from a guy that was the photos showed people from the extreme right wing, the socialist nationalist, you could call them national socialist people from Ukraine were meeting. That's what they call themselves, but it's Nazis. It's original Nazi ideology. And they were meeting in Bad Tölz, which is a NATO school. Also, they were meeting with people from the Marshall Fund. I was wondering what were they doing. This was before the Maidan. Got the information that it's a lot about fracking, because fracking seems to be interesting in Ukraine, but in the eastern part, which is Donetsk, Luhansk. And this is also where the heavy industries are. This is the part that Russia wants, where the Russian population, the population is Russian in origin. Ukraine is not a country with one population. It's divided into different zones of ethnical zones. And at that time, there was already talk. And this is for the first time where I noticed that the Biden family is in there. But there was also Soros in it, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Soros is always in it. Soros, Ukraine was his maybe famous project. He started his NGOs there very early in Soviet Union already in the 80s. And in Ukraine, he is very active since the 90s. He is already influencing the educational system and bringing anti-Russian narratives in the Ukrainian school books. So the kids at school from the first class, they are learning that Russia is evil. You have to know, and many people don't know that, in the Soviet Union, Ukraine and Russian, well, it's hard to say that they are two people. I'm living in Russia since the 90s, and I have so many friends who have relatives in Ukraine, even brothers, sisters, whatever. So this was very, very mixed. And Mr. Brzezinski, and people who are interested in politics know him, Mr. Brzezinski wrote his book, The Great Chessboard, in 97. And in this book, he said, if the U.S. wants to keep the worldwide dominance, the U.S. has to divide Ukraine from Russia. Because, as he said, without Ukraine, Russia is a regional power. With Ukraine, it's a world power. And this was what they're working on. And they divided... starting with the kids at school, they divided Russian and Ukrainian population. I have seen the school books in Ukraine. And this was real propaganda, like the Russians are no humans and so on. And Soros was the one financing that. And Russia, after the Maidan in May 2014, Soros said on CNN, and he was proud of that, that he played a big role in the Maidan and in this so-called revolution, which was a coup somehow, in fact. We can discuss why it was a coup, but anyway, I can explain that. So Soros was playing a role in this, and Mr. Onyshenko, the guy who was the advisor of President Poroshenko after the Maidan, He told me this was very simple. When Soros was the one who was getting his fingers on the gas, on the fracking industry. And Onyshenko himself had a gas company. And it was very simple. They came and said, hey, you have a nice office here in Kiev. We know it's worth 20 million. We give you three. And if you don't agree, tomorrow the corruption prosecutor will be here. And this is how. This was the part that came to Soros. So Biden was on the gas from Russia, which was supplying Ukraine. This was the reverse gas story we had already. There, Biden was sitting via Mr. Hochstein, and on the fracking, Mr. Soros came. So it was about money. And this is a quite interesting story. And Soros himself is proud and said it on CNN and other media that he was had a big influence on what happened there. And later on he called Ukraine his most successful project ever.
Mm-hmm. We go to the ads now for another round of advertisement. And after that, I'd like you to get a little bit into the topic why this was a coup, because the war really started in 2014, not in 2022. And then also after that, you have a story. You were contacted by a whistleblower who basically told a very important part of Seema, her story about the divers. You got information in there too. So this is after the ads.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Equity, equity, equity. If the left is allowed to continue this racist effort, it'll be a major contributor to the end of the United States as we have known her. And it poses obvious dangers that the left, the media, and most on the right have decided not to discuss. We should strive to make sure that the best and the brightest succeed and attain positions that affect us all, whether it's in government, the military, in the cockpit of our jumbo jets, in the operating room, or in our courts, where the accused depend on the attorney sitting next to them to help assure they get treated fairly. The latest lowering of standards comes from Delaware, where the state's top court has lowered the score required to pass the bar exam. According to Reuters, the court said that the changes include reducing the cut score on the exam. The number of essays is also being reduced from 8 to 4, along with the number of possible topics. Why? The court cited a report that claimed that the status quo may be a roadblock for people from underrepresented racial and ethnic groups who may be qualified to practice law in the state. In other words, equity. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Our brains control how we act in the world. But did you know the world around us also affects our brains? Our genes, environment, and social interactions all work together to shape the way our brains develop. Sometimes these factors combine in ways that create unhealthy thoughts or feelings. Over time, these unhealthy thoughts and feelings become so unmanageable that we need outside support to get better. 50% of people will develop at least one mental health condition during their lifetime, and half of those people will develop a mental health condition by age 14. Unfortunately, it takes about 10 years for people to get the treatment they need. We don't wait to treat health problems like heart disease or cancer until stage 4. We shouldn't wait to take care of our mental health. The right early treatment can change lives, reducing school dropout rates, hospitalization, incarceration, and unemployment. Imagine what the world would look like if we all got the help we needed when we first started showing the early warning signs. Start the conversation before stage 4. Visit mentalhealthamerica.net to get informed, take an online screening, and better understand your own mental health.
A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
You're listening to Dirk Pohlman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And my guest is Thomas Röper, a German correspondent from Russia, a correspondent really for the alternative media, because the stories he transports are not fitting the mainstream narrative because of the things we just heard, for example, about the Biden family's involvement in Ukraine. But let's get to the thing you mentioned for a short moment. That is, the United States spent $5 billion U.S. dollars on the regime change in Ukraine. And why do you think it was a coup?
This is very simple. When you see the days end of February, after 20th of February 2014, there came a delegation from Europe, which was the German and the Polish and the French foreign minister, and they were discussing with the President Yanukovych and the opposition from the Maidan how to solve the problem in a peaceful way. And then they came to an agreement, and Yanukovych said, okay, we will have new elections. He agreed on everything the Maidan was protesting for. And they left Kiev, and in the night after that, the armed forces of Maidan, they had armed forces, by the way, they took over the government. So they came into the government part of the city and took over the ministries, the parliament, and so on. Yanukovych at that time was on a planned trip to the city of Kharkov, where he had some conference of his party. So he was not in Kiev. The Western media say he flew from Kiev. It was not true. He just left on a planned trip. So, and then what happened? They said he flew from Kiev, so we have no president. And then they took the parliament and said, we vote for a new...
You mean he fled from Kiev? That what they were telling was that he was escaping. Yeah. He fled, not flew.
Yeah, okay. He ran away. And they said in the parliament, okay, we don't have a president. He ran away. We elect a new president, and then we have elections. Now let's have a look at the Ukrainian constitution. At that time, there were four possibilities how the president can be removed from office before elections. First was his death. He was not dead. He's still alive. Second was that he is somehow the health problems and has to leave office because of this. This also didn't happen. The third thing was impeachment. Impeachment would have meant that there will be a prosecutor. And then the prosecutor presents his results to the constitutional court. The court decides, yes, he broke laws. And then the parliament has to vote with 75% for an impeachment. So all this didn't happen. And the parliament had only 73% when they voted for a new president. So even this point wasn't fulfilled. And the fourth point in the constitution was that the president declares his resignment himself in the parliament, which he didn't do. So we see that was a coup, because it was not Yanukovych was not removed in the way the constitution of the country said. And we have the situation that armed forces took over the government, and then they made an election with 73%. By the way, there was force. We have reports and pictures that in the parliament were these people with masks and with Kalashnikovs, the armed forces from the Maidan, and then try to vote another way than they want. So this was what happened on these days in Kiev, and this was a coup, just by definition. Whether you like it or not, is another question, but it was a coup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have 8 minutes to go, and I'd like to get into one thing which I found fascinating on your blog. Recently, you published information that you got last year, 2022, about divers, American divers that were going down to the pipeline. And at that time, you chose not to publish it. Maybe you tell us this story. What did you get? Why didn't you publish it? What's the information that was in there?
It was like somehow like a week after the explosion of North Streams. I have a friend in Moscow. He's an American. And he got an email from a guy saying, I'm a NATO soldier, took part in the maneuvers Baltops 22. And on my ship, there came some Americans, whatever, special forces, but they looked like, as he put it, quote, Islamic terrorists with beards and long hair. And they were talking to a U.S. vice admiral and some civilians who should be from Secret Services. Then they left the boat, the ship with the boat, training officially. The official version was training something with underwater mines, but they went to the wrong location. got into water and disappeared for more than 6 hours. They even informed the 6th U.S. fleet that the divers were away because 6 hours is too long for divers, and this and the divers are lost. And the 6th fleet said, no, everything is okay. Just don't mention it. Don't write a report. Everything is okay. They later on returned and left the ship. So this is the short version. Well, we got this email. John, my friend, he mentioned it on his video blog on YouTube. I didn't, because I'm always working with sources which I can somehow cross-check. And the only thing I had was an email of a guy I don't know. And he said, this is a don't write back. This is a one-time email. I will not get your answers. So I couldn't ask him anything. The photos attached, I couldn't cross-check. Photoshop is doing everything you want. So I took it just for information and didn't write about it. But when we had the Hirsch report coming out, the story fits, because Hirsch said it were Americans, divers on the Baltops maneuvers, and so on. So the details I got from this, for me, unknown source, they exactly fitted into the Hirsch story, and that's why I wrote about this after the Hirsch report came out, because then it fits just like a piece in a puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can also say that this is not knowledge, that Hirsch got the same information that you got afterwards, but it also means that what we hear, one of the main arguments is Hirsch relies on one source and that's it. And it can't be one source, because he's talking
but
about
Hirsch
the...
Hirsch has another source. Sorry. Hirsch, for the listeners, Hirsch has another source. He says he has a source within the U.S. administration who was... involved in the planning of this, and I have just a soldier who told me, well, I was on the ship, and I'm an officer in NATO and of a NATO state, and I saw that. So these are two different sources. It's not the same source.
This is exactly the point I wanted to make, and I think this is the point, that because Hirsch is somebody from the administration who is in that strange building. If you stand in front of the White House, it's to the right. I know this building because I filmed it, because that's where the Operation Deceptions Committee of the Reagan government, who was involved in also blowing up a pipeline, the Yamal pipeline in Siberia in 1980, as a predecessor. What the Secretary of the Air Force, Thomas Reed, told us in the interview, that they were doing it. It was Gus Weiss, a guy from CIA, who planned that. And he fell from the balcony of a hotel. And so everybody, I talked to three people from the government who assumed that he was killed by the Soviets at that time. So there's a predecessor for that. And I think what you're telling now corroborates that Seymour Hirsch, and this was my assumption, because the way he works, he doesn't go out with just one person telling him something. And this is a good hint, like you said, that Hirsch is not only one source, what he is accused of right now. But there was another thing that you were mentioning, is that they were using special equipment, right? Tremix, which is helium and oxygen. It's basically oxygen and nitrogen, but this is used for deep diving. And then also 6 hours, as you mentioned, is something you need to be. They might somewhere in a mini sub or somewhere. Mini subs, for example, can be transported by the USS Kearsarge, the carrier that was that is equipped to let in and take out and take in mini subs. Is there anything from the details?
Yeah, there's an interesting detail. It's called Mark 29. MK-29, the source which wrote the email to John, which I also got, mentioned the people had MK-29 equipment, which is a special equipment for deep diving, a rebreather system, it's called, for deep dive, for staying long under the water. It's secret. He mentioned it, and with the Hirsch report, it makes sense, because if you look at the site of the Pentagon, they are proud of this MK-29. And MK-29, Mark 29, was developed in Panama City, Florida, which is mentioned by Hirsch, from where the divers are. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm saying I told you, I have so many details, we can make a 3-hour show of that. This is one of the details, this MK29, which my sources mentioned in October 22, and which is from Panama City, Florida, and Hirsch mentioned Panama City, Florida as the base of these divers. So this is just one of the details.
Yeah, that. Thank you very much, Thomas, for this. I think that's the first. We need some more shows with you, because listeners might have noticed that you're a treasure trove of information. And if you're interested in more from Thomas Röpe, and it's all just heard, then write to me, just let me know, and we'll find other dates to get that. You have a source from Russia who is unique. I think what Thomas says is he's often on Russian TV. They consider him a valuable German, so we should notice that it works the other way around too.